White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 547.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins! Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello! Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with thewareaglereader.com, and of course, by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, our Patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we are back. We are here to talk about some cool stuff tonight, including running backs, aren't we? That's going to be a lot of fun. This is the one I think people have been waiting on.
Yes. This is the hotly debated topic. So, good for us to weigh in officially on this.
Oh yeah, gonna be fun. But also, we're gonna talk about the 12-team playoff that's coming. That's interesting. What you looking forward to talking about that a little bit? We're gonna dig into it.
I am. I'm excited.
Yeah, and we're gonna look at kind of like what Auburn would have done if such a thing had existed over the years. There's a few times that it would have mattered. There's maybe some times it might have hurt us because it would have been more hurdles. When we didn't need hurdles, you know, but it would be balanced out with years that we needed another way in, obviously, and we didn't have another way in. So it's one of those things where you change the system, and in some years that's good, and in some years that's bad. Or not necessarily bad, but potentially more
different.
Challenging. Yeah, different, more challenging. Yeah. So anyway, well, how are things going in your neck of the woods, sir?
It's good. It's summertime. Just the school's let now, graduations and that kind of stuff. So it's an exciting time of year, and we're, you know, looking forward to hopefully enjoying a little more relaxing time this summer. And
it's different than last year.
That's true.
Last year when we got on the COVID bandwagon, I had the hammock out in the yard all spring working on our book on the iPad and just chilled back in the nice 70-degree weather. But by the time the spring semester was over and I could start doing that now, it's like 100 degrees outside. We're in a heat wave right here. Is it hot up there like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was brutal this weekend here.
Golly. I haven't cut the grass in a week or more. The outside work is piling up, and I take one step out the door and go, nah, I'm not going to be doing that today. No. So this is mid-June, and we've got the rest of June, July and August. So we know we've got our barbecue show coming up at some point, probably in August, talking about the upcoming season. We got a few other things in mind for the rest of the summer. And like I said, tonight our big topic is going to be running backs. But before that, we want to talk about, well, let me ask you first, do we have any news? I didn't see any on our agenda for tonight, but has there been anything that's happened this last week?
Not really. Desi Sills not coming. We did not talk about that, but it's happening. Other than that, I don't think anything else.
Yeah. I remember, like 2 or 3 weeks ago hearing that he was running into problems with his major, with like, it wasn't really transferring properly. And people on Twitter were telling me, no, that's ridiculous. It's not going to be a problem. Well, you know what? It was a problem. Something effective. What he was studying is just not something Auburn even offers. So they couldn't even give him, you know, they couldn't give him credit for everything he'd already taken. And who would come to a college if you can't do that?
It's not just that. I think he would have had to work a couple of extra semesters to graduate going here versus somewhere else. And I think that was part of it, really would have set him back, potentially even made him not eligible or whatever. So
good grief.
Yeah.
Yeah. So apparently, I guess in Arkansas, they let you major in milkshake construction or something. And it was like some kind of like a hotel management or something like that. It seems like something interesting that we didn't have. So yeah, that was actually, believe it or not, and this is going to sound weird because you know me about as well as anybody, that was actually something I considered majoring in, not at Auburn because we don't have it, but my second choice back in 1986 when I was getting ready to go off from Sylacauga and go to college. My first choice was Auburn, and I was going to have to figure out something to study at Auburn. I didn't know. But my second choice college was Florida State at Panama City because they had a degree in hotel and restaurant management. And I thought, oh, get it? Spend 4 years going to class at Panama City Beach and then graduate and get a job working, air quotes, in Panama City Beach. I thought, this is like the perfect career for me. So there's an alternate universe out there where I've spent the last, 40 years or whatever in Panama City, Florida.
The path not taken.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's interesting to think about. I probably had skin cancer 15 times because I've been out in the sun all the tank time. But hey, it would have been interesting. It would have been different. So, all right. Well, let's look at the 12-team playoffs situation that's been talked about. I think it's interesting. I'm going to let you run with this. I'll hand the ball to you. But first, let me drop back and do the play action pass because I want to say this. I think it's interesting that everybody assumes that the college football powers that be that make these kind of decisions are going to be as conservative and slow moving as possible because that's what history has shown us, right? History has taught us that they're going to be incremental and take years between changes. And so people were like, well, we'd really like 8 teams, but we're probably going to get 6 or something. So we're trying to figure out how to reconcile ourselves to the thought of only 6 when we really want 8. And they come out and go, yeah, we're thinking it's 12. And I could hear jaws dropping on sports reporters and sports analysts coast to coast because they don't usually do this. They don't usually go, oh, screw it, all in, baby. Let's go to 12. So what was your immediate emotional reaction after a lifetime of incremental?
Shock. I mean, I was desperately hoping for 8, right?
Yes.
I have been an 8-person playoff thing. I felt it solves many problems. Get the five Power 5 conference champions, and then the some at-large, like the highest group of 5 team, and then 2 at-large spots. Boom. But once they roll this out and walk through it, it actually makes more sense to do this than to do that,
yep.
Especially if you're the SEC. It makes
yes.
it, for the SEC being kind of in the driver's seat a lot of this stuff, this makes way more sense than the other options. But also, I think it really is an elegantly crafted solution because it does also deal with the potential of or the problem of accessibility from the group of 5 and builds them a way in. And it allows the other conference champions a way to get in, right? Unless they're really terrible, and the other schools. And the biggest thing is just it deals with that problem of by mid-November, 99% of the teams have checked out because they're not going to make the playoff. Mm-hmm. And now it's a situation where the first week in November, everybody in the top 25 is still in the game. And so it really is a different ballgame in that way of making people feel like they got a shot and what's going to happen. And so if this team wins on conference championship weekend and this team loses, what happens and who else could get in and what would the matchups be and stuff. And I think it's going to add a whole other layer of fun to college football. And the biggest thing is I just think playoff games on home stadiums are going to be awesome.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
going to be grade A gold, and I love college football, and that's going to be good college football.
Somebody I heard talking about this the other day was saying, may have been Stuart Mandel or somebody, we're going to go into and break it all down, but I've got to say this because what you just said. He's like, well, the committee was saying, well, we don't really want to have home campus games. Who's going to want to go to see Michigan State in December? And Stuart's like, Michigan State. I thought, yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Well, and it's the when that determines that. Because here's the deal. The thing doesn't expire until 2025.
Right.
Okay? So if you want to change it before 2025, the existing players, meaning ESPN and the bowl games, both have to be involved. If you want to change it before 2025, those two groups have to be involved. You could wait until 2025 to implement this and put it out to the highest bidder and cut all the bowl games out if you wanted to and do it, the first round all on campus, even the second round on campus, and cut the big bowl games out and keep you know, keep the money and deal with that then. And they just have like the whatever the semifinals and the final one in bowl games or whatever. So, but they don't want to wait till 2025. I think they want to implement this not, you know, like this year, but maybe next year or 2023 at the latest. So I think if they want to implement it, then you must involve the bowl games and ESPN has to come in with the money. So I think this compromise about the bowl games, I think is just a vehicle to get us to the next thing.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. It really does. So let's kind of walk through how it's going to work. So and explain for those that haven't really looked into it yet why 12 is superior to 8. Let me tell you my understanding of it, and you tell me where I'm wrong and right or whatever, okay? My thinking was the reason that the SEC loves this is if you have 4, the SEC's been doing really well with that. They're always in and maybe even 2 of the 4, okay? If you go to 8, that doesn't really change because you're just letting more other teams in. Like you're letting the Pac-12 suddenly get in and maybe like a group of 5, you know, whatever team or whatever. So you're not really doing anything that changes the SEC's formula already. You're just making the party bigger. Whereas if you go to 12, half the dang SEC could end up in this thing. Is that pretty much?
Well, that's it. Because I think it was Andy Staples who said this on his podcast in the last day or two, that the SEC did not want to go to a playoff model where they were less or the same number of open spots right. as now. Right now, there's 4 at large spots. They're all at large. And so they 8, there would only be 2 at large.
Right.
And so they did not want to go to that because it wasn't good for them. In this case, you know, the SEC champ's going to get in, and there's 6 other at large spots. So, I mean, the SEC is thinking we're going to get 4 or 5 teams a lot of years. That's what they're thinking in their brain. Now, I don't know if that's really going to happen. I think a lot of years, maybe. But even then, I think they're going to get 3 every year and probably 4 a lot of years. And that is what they're thinking about right there. This is what this deal is about to the SEC.
Oh, and that's going to be, a third of the teams will be in the SEC because most years, I mean, you'd have Alabama just in general. You have Georgia. And then some years you're going to have Auburn and LSU. Some years you're going to have Florida. You know, it's going to be it's going to be like a rotational among 3 or 4 others that, you know, it used to would say Tennessee, but not anymore. But Texas A&M.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think this is really remarkable. And so the way it's going to work then is each group of 4 gets something or doesn't get something so that there's a distinction. In other words, to keep it meaningful all the way to the end, if you're in the first 4, you get a bye to the second round and you're at home, right?
No, the top 4 teams get a bye, right? And then there's the 8 teams left, and so out of those 8 teams, the higher seeded teams get a home playoff game.
Right, yeah. So it's 5, 6, 7, and 8 play 9, 10, 11, and 12 in 5, 6, 7, 8's home stadium.
That's right. Then the winners of those games play 1, 2, 3, and 4 at big bowl game sites.
There you go. Okay.
But at, you know, they'll do that kind of thing where it's at the big, I don't know, probably they'll do it where it's at the big bowl game site, like 1 gets the 1 closest to them. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And 2 gets the 1 closest to them, like that. So I think that, again, would be an advantage, clearly not as big an advantage as having a home playoff game. But you get a week off to rest and recover and watch the other team, and they have to play a super tough game. You know what I'm saying? They might lose or they might get beat up or whatever.
And you don't have to go to their stadium.
That's right.
So you never have to play in somebody else's stadium.
That's right. If you're in the top 4, you don't have to go on the road at all. You're playing neutral site games. But you might play 3 neutral site games in the playoff, first round, second round, final. And that's a lot of money in neutral site tickets for fans. That's the other piece of this. Is like, this is about the TV money and not about we care about the fans.
Right. I mean, I'm totally in favor of as much of these kind of games being on home campuses as possible, because going to a postseason game is expensive and difficult. And when they added the SEC championship, I mean, I guess there have to be a lot of Alabama fans with a lot of money every year to afford that and then to be able to go to some other big bowl. I still laugh at the poor guy that, like, mortgaged his house to go to the first Alabama National Championship game because he said, I might not see this ever again in my lifetime. And it's like, you could have gone 15 times, man. But yeah, I mean, it's expensive, and so you have to make that decision. Like, in 2010, you know, I'm thinking, oh, I need to get my tickets for Atlanta. And then I thought, well, wait a minute, the way we're playing, we may go to Arizona. Do I want to go to Atlanta and not Arizona? Or do I want to go to Arizona, but then I have to miss us? Because that's the first time I'd ever missed us playing in Atlanta, was 2010. I'd been to the other three, but I didn't get to go to 10 because I saved up every penny to go to freaking Arizona. So if you're going to add more layers...
Yeah. You probably would have gone to the first playoff game. We would have had a bye, and then we'd have been playing somebody at home.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's so we'll see. But, I do think this is certainly not only a good thing, a good idea, but better than we expected. I'm kind of sorry that it looks like the four-team playoff will come and go without us ever being in any of them. But, oh well. We were in the BCS the year before, so we only missed it by a year. You know what I mean? I mean, we, in fact, you know, if there had been a playoff our year, maybe we would have lost in the semis. I don't know. I don't think we would have. But theoretically, we could have lost and never even gotten to play Florida State. So it worked out as well as it. That's what I was saying earlier, you know, is that, like, the good side of this is there's more opportunity to get in. But the bad side is there's more opportunity to get out, to lose, you know. So,
well, I think that's the fun part to me is, like, we wanted to see some group of five teams get shots against big, good teams, and we're going to see it. It's the best, you know, the Central Floridas, the Cincinnatis, the Coastal Carolinas, the Houstons, when they're really good, we're going to see them in a big time game against another really good team.
And they've got pressure on them to live up to the hype, because if they go out there and lay an egg and get beat 60-0, people are going to be like, see, this was all a dumb idea. We should have just kept it how it was.
But also, I think, like, they may get underseeded too. Like, they may be the 12 seed and then they get the, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, could be. Well, it'll be fun to see. And I agree with you that they'll probably do it sooner than later. It's one of those things where, again, they incremental and move very slowly. But when money is the universal solvent for the NCAA and for the college football programs, everything is impossible unless there's like $1 billion on the table, and suddenly things become very possible. It's amazing how that solves problems, you know?
And this does create other problems, right?
Yeah.
You can't ask players to play three more games, theoretically, right? Or four more games, I guess. That'd be right?
Well, you got your conference championship game would be game 13. Then maybe you get into your 5 through 12, so you play that game. And then you play the final four, and then you play the championship. So 16 games that Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, who's the other
Ohio
one?
State.
Ohio State, yeah. Oh, that reminds me. I saw a statistic the other day. It said that we've played now – 28. We've played 28 playoff games since it started in 2014, right? We've played four every year for 7 years. Four teams, right? Four teams have played in the playoffs every year for 7 years. So 28 instances of a team being in the playoffs. Is that making any sense at all?
Yes.
28 instances of a team being in the playoffs. Of those, the only time that the two teams playing in a playoff game of any of the, you know, the semifinal, that's, yeah. So that's 21 games, right? That's three games a year. I was talking about teams, but let's go games. I'm sorry. Let me be clear. Three playoff games a year for 7 years, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 21. 20. This will be 21, but there's been seven. So 21 games. Of those 21 playoff games, how many of the 21, John, how many did not have one of those four, any of those four teams in it?
I don't know. One?
Yes. One time out of 21 playoff games did not involve Alabama, Ohio State, Oklahoma, or Clemson.
Clemson,
yeah. One.
That was that Florida State Oregon one.
That was the only one. Is that crazy? I mean, this is why you've got to change it. Because it's the same four teams every year. Georgia gets in, but they play one of those teams. You know, Washington got in, but they played one of those teams, Alabama. So, you know, you get a few other teams, but it's just ridiculous. So this is great. This is great. Let's look at how Auburn would have done. The one thing I found was interesting, the 2017 team would have still gotten in. And, you know, who knows, maybe Kerryon would have felt better. And we would have been back.
Healthy.
Yeah, healthier by the time we played. And so maybe we would have had a chance in 17. We know that at full strength, our 17 team could have beaten anybody, because they did. They beat the number one team twice in a row.
The problem is, I think the way the bracket worked out in 17, we'd have played Miami in the first round, and we could have beaten them with the healthy Kerryon, but then we would have played Oklahoma again.
Yeah, that would have been interesting. I'd have liked to play them again with an actual quarterback, though. Now, the year that messed us up was 2019, because in 2019, we were number 12. So, in a way, you would think we would get in. But this is the other rule I wanted to talk to you about for a second. There's a special rule about conference champions, and we would have gotten jumped by Memphis in 19. Do you understand that enough to explain the deal with that?
I think it's top six or top five highest rated conference champions, regardless of conference.
Yeah.
So if it's Central Florida is higher rated than the ACC and Pac-12 champion, they're in. You know what I'm saying? Or Cincinnati, whoever wins that league, they're in. So that's the deal. There's no guarantees for the SEC or any other conference. It's just like the highest rated conference champions are in, and then it's at-large teams. And so in that case, the next highest rated conference champion was Memphis, because a couple of the other conference champions were weak that year. And so Memphis, you know, knocked Auburn out, basically.
Yeah, they jumped. They were not in the top 12, but they were a conference champion. So they jump. They get in through that rule, pushing the number. We're the first one out. We're on the bubble, first one out. So basically, yeah. In the 19 team, it would have been interesting, but yeah, that defense certainly. But so we wouldn't have made it in 19. 17, we would have been in. I know that back a few years earlier, like. The 2006 team would have had a very good chance because they finished 11-2. The 2010 would have been interesting because we would have totally gotten a bye all the way. You know, we were the number one team at the end. We would have probably ended up playing like TCU, I think. I think Oregon would have played. Well, no, probably Oregon and TCU would have played each other as 2 and 3. And we would have played whoever number 4 was that year. I don't even remember. Maybe
was that the year TCU and Baylor were both good? That was a year or two later.
Maybe a year or two later. I'm not sure. But anyway, I remember that there were three undefeated teams, Auburn and Oregon and TCU. And it's one of those things where, like, when it's Auburn and Oklahoma and USC, people are like, oh, this isn't fair. Auburn's getting left out. People looked at Auburn with Cam. They looked at Oregon. And they looked at TCU and they're like, no, we got it right. We got it right. TCU, sorry. Better luck, you know, some other year. Too bad. I feel bad for him, but not really. I don't. Anything else about the playoff, the 12-team playoff thing that we haven't mentioned?
Just that this is the goal now.
Yeah.
This is the goal for Harsin, and the measuring stick is get Auburn in the playoff sometime the next few years. That's the goal. Yeah. That's where we want to go.
We want to get in. It's interesting. It gets more. It really does get more and more like basketball, where the measuring stick just becomes, were you in the tournament, right? Or did you not make the tournament? It's going to be, were you in the playoffs or were you not? And there's going to be years that, like, Arkansas gets in. It'll happen. There'll be years that Tennessee, maybe, or, you know, Missouri, like they had the year that they almost, you know, they took us to the SEC championship. There's going to be years that other SEC teams get in besides the Big Six or Seven, whatever we are now. And it's going to be like, well, how many times has your program gotten in, you know? Whereas with four, it's pretty much, well, we haven't. Or one time, you know, unless you're one of those perennials. So, okay. If you guys out there in Radio Land have any thoughts about that, be sure to send it in to John and me at AU Wishbone or on Twitter or auwishbone@gmail.com. We'd like to hear your thoughts on it. Maybe we'll do another segment next week and talk about, you know, what the feedback was on this. If people think it's a good idea, a bad idea. Was there a year where Auburn would have really benefited or not benefited that we haven't really talked about? So certainly 1983 would have been nice, because in 1983, I like the idea.
I was going to say, like, I think about 2002.
Yeah.
And that team was hot at the end of the year.
Yeah.
You know, nobody wanted to play that team at the end of the season.
2005 also.
Yeah, 2005. Again, say, very hot at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. I think we could have caught fire and done some damage.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, that 05 team, they started bad, but then they got it together, and the only game they lost really after that was that that LSU game where they missed all the field goals. And that's not going to happen every week, so yeah. But think about the 83 team, though, real quick. The 83 team, and God, of course, 2004 would have loved it, but the 83 team, well, here's what I love. If they had had just a four-team playoff based on ranking in 83, Miami wouldn't have even been in the playoffs. They wouldn't have even been there to jump us. We would have played Texas again, and Nebraska would have played Georgia. And I think we get Texas in a rematch, because we knew what we did wrong. We got a whole little section in our book about that. We'll get to that. And then Georgia-Nebraska would have been interesting, because Georgia had a defense. Would have been an interesting game. How'd you like an Auburn-Georgia national championship game? Can you stand it, Charlie? Can you stand it? Wow. All right. Well, send us in your thoughts. Let's look at running backs. What you want to say about running backs?
We had some good ones.
We have.
And we had some great ones.
Yes.
And so I think we got to talk through it. But I think we got to separate the deity level from the great running back level, and then talk through some of those and try to draw some lines at the among all the great running backs Auburn's had about and put them into some tiers.
All right. Yeah.
And so we're going to start at the DAT level with Bo Jackson.
Well, I think we're all going to start with Mario Fannin, right?
Marquise, hey. The Wizard Cooper.
Oh, Marquise. See, I was going to say, Fannin, he could catch a pass, and he could fumble a football. That was his two go-to moves. Catch the pass and go for 80 yards, or lay the ball on the ground. He was a giving person, but he was an instrumental part of that 2010 national championship. He's a forgotten cog in the machine that was 2010. Yes. Everybody talks about Cam. Okay, so yeah, Bo Jackson obviously is on another plane from everybody else, right?
Yes. And not just because of his exploits as a professional football and baseball player, all that stuff, or all of the, you know, great mythology around Bo Jackson. I mean, he was still is the all-time leading rusher for Auburn. In career yardage, and you know, played at a time when offenses were different and all that, but everybody in the stadium knew he was getting the ball at some key times, and so he got the ball, and it didn't matter. It didn't matter that, you know, people knew he was getting the ball or they were trying to stop him, whatever. He's second in career all-purpose yards, I think. Or single season all-purpose yards by Trey Mason on a year when he had a bunch of kickoffs too. And he, you know, was consistently great. I mean, he had the Heisman season, but he was a difference maker in you know, so many games. So I think that's the big thing about Bo. He's just fun to watch.
Well, he's one of the few running backs that we've had who averages well over 6 yards a carry. He averaged 6.62. Most of our best running backs average 5. Brent Fullwood was 7.15. Excuse me, Brent. You are awesome in 86. There's no doubt about that. But yeah, most of them are 4 or 5 yards per carry type guys. Interestingly, one of our running backs that had a long yard per carry was Ontario McCaleb, because when he would get loose, he would be gone. He had those big long runs. But the running back that had the most attempts career-wise was actually Cadillac. Tuberville ran him into the ground, didn't he? And that's when he was in the same backfield with Ronnie Brown most of the time. And he still got the most carries, which is crazy. It's 741 attempts, which is like 60-something more than number two Ben Tate. That's kind of mind-boggling that he had that many attempts.
Well, I think this just goes to show the difference. Like, in the games that he played in, Bo Jackson This was in his best year, in the Heisman year. Bo averaged 162 yards a game.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot for running back.
Yeah, it is, especially when you don't have a passing game and everybody knows that you're getting the ball, and he still did it. I got a note, by the way, before I move off his page, that receiving by a running back, Mario Fannin is number one. He's number one in yards and receptions.
And receptions.
And it's like far and away in 97. He's also number one in touchdown receptions by a long way. No other running back has more than four receiving touchdowns in their career. That's James Brooks. Fannin's got nine. that was his thing.
It was a different era for throwing to the running back, and that's really evolved over time. So I think it's fair to judge that. I mean, James Brooks was a great receiver, and again, a current environment, he'd have had a lot of catches.
Yes. Yeah, he really would have. It continues to amaze me how many of the players on these all-time lists are people I remember very clearly from just a few years ago. It's like they really are skewed toward the last, toward the offensive explosion of the last 20 or 30 years, I think it's really made a lot of difference. So let's break him down. Bo Jackson obviously is in a class by himself. I see you have the two guys from the late 70s kind of together. How do you, because you and I don't have the same memories of James Brooks and Joe Cribbs that we do the ones we watched, as grown-ups every week. But I remember them. You know what I mean? I remember hearing their names all the time. I remember that Cribbs was a year older, and so Cribbs was like the go-to back, and Brooks was the understudy. Kind of like Fullwood. Yep. Kind of like Bo was under Lionel, and then Fullwood was under Bo. You know what I mean? And so there was that one year after Cribbs went off to the USFL or whatever, and then the Buffalo Bills, that Brooks had it all to himself, and he had his Fullwood year. I guess that was 80, I think.
80.
Yeah. So how do you rate James Brooks and Joe Cribbs compared to these other guys?
I mean, they're third and fourth on all-time rushing yardage at Auburn. Thanks. So, I mean, that by itself is a lot. They were four-year contributors. Again, as freshmen, they both didn't do a whole lot. But they had big, as upperclassmen, they had big seasons. I mean, a lot of carries, a lot of yards, a lot of touchdowns. I think, and it does, I remember them in my mind. I remember them more clearly as NFL players, right, because I was older. And for a long time, James Brooks was the leading rusher in Cincinnati Bengals history, and Joe Cribbs was the leading rusher in Buffalo Bills history for a long time. And they played in the same backfield with William Andrews, who ended up becoming the all-time rusher in Atlanta Falcons history for many years. So, and Andrews was just the fullback on that team. So I think Brooks was the better all-around back, a better receiver. And I think Cribbs was more a better inside runner, more durable, and maybe Brooks a little more explosive, maybe.
Yeah, that seems right. I always felt like Brooks was thinner.
Yeah, he's a little lighter, I think.
Yeah.
But great running backs who would be great in any era. You know what I'm saying? They were they were all-time great Auburn running backs. So. But it was such a different era. It was such a different offense. It is hard to compare.
They were running mostly out of the power I formation, I believe, as single backs behind a fullback and a H-back or something. It was that Barfield offense that I never fully grasped. Interesting thing right below them, by the way, on the rushing yardage career chart. After Bo and Cadillac and Brooks and Cribbs, number five is Ben Tate. And I think that's more of a longevity thing in a lot of ways because he played for 4 years. And, was getting carries pretty early on. And here's what I think is interesting about Ben Tate. He's number five on the all-time list. But do you remember that in his senior year, going into his senior year, he'd never had a 1,000-yard season?
Yeah.
That was one of the things that Curtis Looper said coming in 2009 for his senior seat, for Ben Tate's senior years. We're going to get him a 1,000-yard season. He's a 1,000-yard back, and we're going to get him. And they did. He got like 1,200 yards. Yeah. So Ben Tate compiled 3,321 yards, getting like, 700, 800, 700, and then like 1,200. Yeah. So just a consistent over 4 year back, I think.
A solid complimentary piece, and then his senior year, he was the man, and he was a difference maker.
Yeah, in Gus's offense. He was the first running back in Gus's Auburn offense. Yeah, in 09, before everything changed the next year. So, all right, so we got Bo, we got Brooks and Cribbs. You got to think of Carnell and Ronnie kind of together that on that 04 team. Carnell was the bell cow from day one in 2001. Ronnie had come in 2000. He redshirted and then really didn't explode until the Florida game of 02 when Cadillac got hurt. I mean, I'll never forget that 02 Florida game in the swamp where Cadillac, I think, broke his leg.
Yep.
And Ronnie came in and just went off. We were like, where'd this guy come from?
He exploded in that game.
Yes. Oh, unbelievable. Unbelievable. He ran. He brought us back from like three touchdowns down. We went to overtime. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, he was the – again, in 2002, Carnell finished with 745 yards. Ronnie didn't really play that much until the Florida game, which was, I don't know, close to the middle of the season.
Yeah.
And he finished with 1,008 yards.
There you go. Yeah, amazing. So those two will always be linked together. And they stayed through the same year, 04. Let's see. So who else you want to throw in there, like on your next tier?
I want to talk about, I think Trey Mason, and then we could talk about, and then Stephen Davis, I think, are the next two I really want to focus on.
Yeah.
In different time periods, right?
Yeah.
But you're dominating running backs.
Very
American kind of running backs.
Very different from each other, but both able to take over a game. Trey Mason doesn't have the most attempts. He's like, he only had 516, but that was in 3 years. If you gave Trey another season, like in 14, he'd have had 800 attempts. I think. I think he'd be in number one ahead of Carnell.
Yeah.
Because Gus had no problem handing the ball to Trey every other play.
And I think he might have ended up the all-time leading rusher.
Yeah, he could have. Yeah, Trey ended up with 2979. So right at 3,000, he would have needed just over 1,300 to catch Bo. And how many did Trey have in 2013?
He had 1,800 yards.
Holy crap!
That's what I'm saying.
He could have he could have dropped 400 yards lower and still beaten Bo Jackson for number one.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, he really didn't play that much his freshman year.
No.
He did most of this.
He was the kickoff guy.
Yeah. He did all this in 12 and 13. Remember in 12, he got the 1,000 yards in 12 on like the last play of the Iron Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, okay, 2013, boom, here you go. Good gosh. Yeah, you're right. He would have been our all-time leading rusher if he'd come back for one more year. And he could have. That's unbelievable. What about Stephen Davis? I mean, he's just like your prototypical big, tall, lean forward as you run I formation tailback, isn't he?
He is. I mean, he's the kind of guy, he could go anywhere and be an I formation tailback and be an All-American. He could have gone to Alabama or Oklahoma or Texas or Ohio State or USC and run the I formation and been an All-American. He was that kind of running back.
Nebraska. Nebraska, yes, would have plugged him in and he'd have had 1,500 yards every year.
That's it. I mean, he was a perfect running back for that kind of offense. He was physical, but he was also explosive. And if he got the crease, he could explode past everybody. And well, he was he was one of those can't miss high school recruits that everybody knew about. Mm-hmm. And Auburn got him. And he was a huge, huge difference maker in this early Terry Bowden team.
Yeah, he would have been on Pat Dye's last team, but he had grade issues. He was a
Prop 48.
And what? I never even thought about, you know what his jersey number was?
48.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. I never thought about that before. What an amazing coincidence. His number was 48. So, yeah, he didn't get to play his first year, but he played 93, 94, and 95. Was a big help on the undefeated 93 team. Very good on 94. And 95 was kind of the year where he really kind of got to, you know, he's a senior. Pat Nix was a senior. And they really clicked, you know. So, you know, Pat trusted him, handing the ball, throwing the ball out of the backfield. And, yeah, really, really good. So Oh man, I mean, you know, he maybe could have had a slightly better career. It was a time of transition. You know, he didn't get to play that 1 year, but still, I mean, he's still considered one of our top backs, isn't he? Don't you think?
He is, and Andy had really good complimentary backs on the team with him. He had Bostic.
Oh yeah, right? James Bostic, absolutely.
So
yeah.
I think that in my mind that influenced his numbers a little bit because he had such a strong number two that we could afford to give him some plays off.
Yeah, well, I think in 93, Bostic was the number one and Davis was number two. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. So who was our other running back in 94 or 95 besides Davis? I can't even remember. I guess he kind of dominated the Bostic. And then, I mean, we really, there wasn't really Fred Beasley, but he was a fullback. Yeah, I guess it really was Beasley, right? Beasley and Rich. And, yeah, because Tony Richardson was gone by 94. So it was really Fred Beasley and Steven Davis. Not bad. Yeah. Not bad. So we talked about Ben Tate. We got to there's another running back that had a huge impact on our program and in one season, and that was Brent Fullwood. And I worry that sometimes he's getting forgotten, right? People remember Bo. People remember Brooks and Cribbs even. But I worry that Brent Fullwood kind of gets forgotten because he backed up Bo for 3 years. But
it's no shame to ride the bench behind Bo Jackson.
No, and he played a lot. I mean, you know, his until, you know, 86 was his year. Tommy Agee was a senior. I mean, Tommy Agee was a great fullback as a freshman. Agee came in as a freshman and started at fullback for us in 83, took us to Sugar Bowl. But in 86, you had a senior Brent Fullwood and a senior Tommy Agee in front of him, and they were a duo. Nobody could stop them. Y'all, nobody could stop them. And, that was also the year we started doing more passing, which gave them even more opportunities because it opened things up a little bit. You know, they're not just running Fullwood into the line every play. But in 84, his other time to shine was 84. There were six games. We've talked about this many times. There were six games where Bo was out, where Jerry Gray separated his shoulder at Texas. And in those six games, we went 6-0, and Brent Fullwood was the man. He led the way. There were others as well, but Brent led the way against Florida State in particular. What a game.
No, you're exactly right. And when you look at not the career numbers, but the single season numbers, he has like the sixth best season overall, tied with Kerryon for yards, and the fourth best season overall, like on a yards per game, and among the most touchdowns. So he really had that 1 year, it was his year in 86, he had a dynamic season.
Yeah, he really did. He'd waited for that year, and he went out there and did it. And I always hated that we lost two games that year, and he did everything he could in both of them. That was Florida and Georgia. And both of them, we had absolutely no business losing. It's just still, nope. There's games that haunt you. I just recently did a bunch of research on those two games, working on our book that I'm talking about in a minute, and reliving what happened at Florida that year. I mean, you remember it, and yet you don't remember. I guarantee you don't remember as bad as it actually was. We led Florida 17-0 well into the fourth quarter of that game. And we lost.
And we had an All-American running back.
Unbelievable.
And we're up 17-0.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Yep. So, let's see. We haven't talked about Rudy Johnson, who came in as a transfer in 2000 for Tuberville in his second year, where we went from a 5-6 team to the SEC West champions, largely because, I would say, of Rudy Johnson.
And from an era of nothing at the running back spot for several years before that,
yes,
to a guy that was a consistent all-SEC kind of player.
Yep.
And a real difference maker. And you talk about a guy that was a bell cow for the offense. That was him. It was all on him.
324 attempts, 1,567 yards in one season, 2000, before he went off to the Bengals. We didn't even recruit him. We were recruiting his quarterback, Daniel Cobb. And while they were looking at Cobb, they're like, wait, who's this running back that nobody can tackle? And that was a thing that, you know, again, people that don't remember or weren't there, the thing that was so awesome about Rudy Johnson was in the first quarter, he was a pretty good running back. In the second quarter, he was above average running back. In the third quarter, you're like, hey, this guy's, he's racking up a little more yards now. In the fourth quarter, when everybody else was getting tired, Rudy would put it into fourth gear, fifth gear, sixth gear, and start dragging people down the field with him. He got stronger as the game went along. It was crazy.
You always talk about running backs that do better, but they got to get their carries and that kind of stuff. And he did. He wore the other team down.
Yeah.
And by the fourth quarter, he was the one dishing out the punishment and getting extra yards and making people bounce off him.
He wasn't necessarily a breakaway threat every time he touched the ball. But if you needed to grind out 3, 4, 5 yards a carry, keep the clock moving, get first downs, he might be my number one running back to go to. He's in my top three if that's what you want. You know what I mean? If you don't want Bo Jackson breaking loose for an 80-yard run or Ontario McCaleb doing that or whatever, if you just need somebody that's going to grind it out the way that Cam did as a quarterback, you know, in 2010, I don't think they hardly ever stopped Johnson on short yardage like that. So, and what's crazy, I'm just looking at the numbers. Rudy Johnson had more yardage in one season than Cam Martin did in 4. I'll just leave that right.
He was the team.
I'll just leave that right there. Yeah, he was. Yeah, you had Ronnie Daniels at receiver and Rudy Johnson. And if you could get the ball to one of those guys every play, there's a chance. We had a chance. Let's see. The other one you had in this little group is Kerryon.
I just felt like he was here. I think, again, he was SEC Player of the Year, you know, his big year. And he was a great running back. But also, I remember, you know, the years before that and the carries that he gave Auburn and how tough some of those seasons were. You know, I'll never forget that game a year or two before his big season when LSU came in and he was the whole offense. And every carry, he got the crap beat out of him. Like, every carry was just brutal. Yeah. He took an absolute beating in that game. And it really messed him up for several games after that, and even the whole season that season. But that he took as much punishment in that game as any Auburn running back I've seen take. And he just kept getting first downs for us to win the game.
Yeah. I will always wonder what could have been if he hadn't gotten hurt in the Alabama game in 17.
Because if he was healthy, we played Georgia.
Yeah, we'd have beaten Georgia, and we were in the people think, well, you lost like 28-7 or whatever. We were in that game in the fourth quarter. Georgia got some cheap garbage touchdowns at the end when it was over, and we knew. But we were in that game. It was like 14-7 in the fourth quarter. We were in that game, and with that defense, and Stidham was having a pretty good year that year. And if we could have just kept that running game going, so he wasn't running for his life. Oh man, that 17 team, I feel like they had such potential that they never really got to show off. And a lot of it was him. I still can't evaluate him. The thing about Kerryon Johnson, I love him to death, and he's great to follow. He's the smartest guy. He is such a smart guy. He may be the smartest running back Auburn's ever had, just in terms of following him on Twitter, and like my wife has followed him on Instagram. I don't know on Instagram, I don't know about that, but she's always been showing me things he'll say and all, and he's really clever and smart. Just a really witty guy. And the thing I have with him, he's so unconventional. He never came across to me like a standard Auburn running back. He always felt more like he was out of position somehow, and yet he was so tough that he could play running back and do a great job. And you might ask me, well, what position would you have him play? I don't know. I know that sounds weird, but he just never struck me as a standard, like, I formation power running back. He was kind of a hybrid pass catching H back kind of. What do you know what I mean? Am I crazy?
I get that. And some because he was a thinner guy. But the other thing, his best quality was his patience.
Yeah.
You know, we see that as something, but he was the most patient running back I've ever seen at Auburn in terms of waiting for the hole to develop. He would wait and wait and wait, and you think it's too long, and then it was just set up right and he was good. And so many other running backs have no patience. They just got to go bull ahead the second they get the ball.
That's true. Yeah. Which is another thing that he even his instincts seem different from most running backs. That's true. It's really interesting. Yeah, interesting guy. Really, absolutely. Let's see. You have another tier down here with Kenny Irons and James Bostic we talked about, and Michael Dyer. Let me say this about Michael Dyer. I was just looking at the chart. And by the way, Kerryon Johnson ends up in 3 years. He ends up number 11 on our all-time list. And let me, before we get to the other group I just mentioned, Kerryon when he went up to number 11, he moved ahead of Stacy Danley, who was running back pretty much solidly for 4 years. Got 526 carries, shared the backfield with James Joseph. They were there about the same years. Joseph had to redshirt 86 after he busted his knee up. So they Joseph and Danley were a backfield duo, 87, 88, 89, and 90. And they ended up, Danley at number 12, Joseph at 14, so they were almost identical. They both got around 500 carries. They both got a little over 2,000 yards. What do you make of Stacy Danley and James Joseph? Were they a product of just having a great team with a great defense and Reggie Slack and Jeff Berger? And I've always thought of them as serviceable but not stellar.
They were solid, tough, productive Auburn running backs. They did the job. Again, that team won 3 SEC titles, so they weren't bad. But they weren't, you know, like the difference makers on that team, right? They did their job and they did it well. Everybody on those teams did, you know. But I just think, like, you compared to all these other players we're talking about, they were on the same level as some of these other guys.
I feel like if we had gotten them at – oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I feel like any of the guys we've talked about so far, if you plugged them in for Danley and Joseph, that team would have been better.
Yes, that's fair. And that's not an insult to them. They were great.
We're talking about them in comparison to these other players.
Right, right. You and I have talked about before, the 87 through 90 team, 87 through 89 really, should have had Emmitt Smith. If Emmitt Smith was an Auburn running back, 87, 88, 89, we win at least one, if not two, if not three national championships. Guaranteed. Yep. Done deal. If he'd been on that team, he'd have been the starting number one back. Danley and Joseph would have been the Mario Fannin and Ontario McCaleb of that team. The other guys that come in occasionally, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
That's fair.
Man, that's the alternate universe I want to visit. I want to visit the one where Emmitt got like 1,500 yards in the 87, 88, and 89 seasons each and ended up with about 4,500 yards in 3 years and would have been ahead of Bo. Wow, man. Oh, my gosh. We didn't talk about Kenny Irons and Michael Dyer.
Kenny Irons may be the most underrated season of any Auburn running back, right? And people just forget now.
Yeah.
Kenny Irons, we talked about the 2005 team a little while ago.
Mm-hmm.
He was the kind of the spark that made that team go.
Yeah.
A very, very explosive season. Went to Baton Rouge, predicted he'd rush for 200 yards in that stadium, and didn't.
Yep, yeah. Wasn't the starting running back at the beginning of the year, which is why we lost to Georgia frickin' Tech. I know. Trey Smith, I believe, was the starting running back.
He was off the previous thing.
And didn't do much. And Reggie Ball. Oh, my God. So, but yeah, Irons was just a tough. Kenny Irons was kind of like a slightly smaller Stephen Davis in a way. A little bit.
That's fair.
Something like that. I mean, that was more his style. Kenny Irons was kind of your standard tailback, and he was tough. He wasn't as big and rugged as Bostic, for example, or Rudy Johnson, but he acted like it. In a lot of ways, he played kind of like Trey Mason. Maybe. Yes. I'm trying to think of comparisons.
Yes.
Played bigger than he was. Tougher than you'd think he was. Yeah. What about Dyer? Where do we put Dyer? I mean, I know he ends up 13th out of his 2 years. 13th on the all-time list. 23-35.
But on that, he wasn't the thing that made the engine go. You know what I'm saying? He was the complimentary piece. When everybody was focusing on Cam, he got the yards. And when Cam wasn't there, it wasn't the same.
No, that's right. Because then he kind of was the focal point of the offense in 11,
and it wasn't moving the needle.
No, not as much. He did okay, but not. I mean, God, the 2010 offense. You had Cam, who was like a giant running back. You had Michael Dyer, Ontario McCaleb, Mario Fannin, and I feel like there was one more. Even I can't remember who it was. You don't need anybody else. My gosh,
he had. Was Corey Grant?
I was going to say Corey Grant, but I think Corey wasn't there until 12. 12 and 13. Yeah, but that's plenty. I mean, my gosh. So, those guys. And then lastly, you had Cameron Petway. And, if there's one Auburn running back that I wish we could go back and let him have, you know, one more crack. If the 17 team had 2016 Petway along with 2017 Kerryon Johnson, that was up there with Cadillac and Ronnie Brown, honestly.
That's right. They were like Cadillac and Ronnie. They were just in different years. If they'd have been like that in the same year, we'd win the SEC.
And they should have been. But yes. Petway got hurt, and then Kerryon got hurt. And they were back. They were never together. They were always one of them hurt. But, man, the two of them together were been unstoppable. Talk about thunder and lightning. Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, I've always wished that we could have seen. Now, Cameron Artis Payne is possibly the most underrated running back in Auburn history, because I honestly think that people think of him as Trey Mason's backup, and that's about it, and they don't realize what he accomplished in 2014. I mean, he did fine in 2013, but in 2014, he had a
great season.
Yes. His numbers are amazing.
Yes. 100%. Again, the third most rushing yards ever for an Auburn player in a season.
Third.
That came in Artis Payne. Yes, sir.
Good grief. Yeah. He was in 2013, he was back there with Mason, with Corey Grant, and maybe one other one that I'm forgetting in 13. But then I guess Dyer was gone by then. But McCaleb was gone by then. But and Nick Marshall getting carries too.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah. By the way, Nick Marshall, a quarterback. Okay. Well, I mean, Phil Gargis is on there too. I get that. But in the modern era, Nick Marshall is number 22 on the Auburn all-time rushing list. Two seasons, 1,866 yards. That's crazy. Nick Marshall's ahead of Tommy Agee and Brad Lester and Rudy Johnson and Jatarvius Booby Whitlow. I love that Cam Newton is number 34 all-time rusher in Auburn history from one season. He's ahead of Mario Fannin, who played 4 years. Good gosh. What about McCaleb?
I just think he was a unique player, has the highest yards per carry of any Auburn running back.
Wow.
Over the course of his career. Over 8.5 yards every time he carried the ball. And yeah, for a guy that small, I mean, that's it just shows how fast and how explosive he was. A real weapon at running back and a very complimentary piece to the other pieces around him.
Yes, absolutely. He's not, as 2012 showed, he's not the guy you want to stick in the I formation and run into the offensive line every play. Mm. But catching the little dump passes and screens, doing the reverse, the speed sweep and all that, oh, man. I mean, if for nothing else, LSU, everybody remembers Cam's run that won him the Heisman. But the play that won the game for us was like an 80-yard sweep by Ontario.
That's right. It was a game-winning play.
Amazing. Yeah. Any other running backs that you want to mention?
Who was the running back on the – we've missed anybody in kind of the pre-Bo era that we haven't talked about, I guess.
Well, we didn't really talk about Lionel James as much as we should. Yes, Lionel had a great career, 80 through 83. Lionel was on the last Barfield team, and then he got to play the first 3 years with Dye. And, you know, in 82 – I mean, 81, he was like the featured back. In 82, he was the lead back, and Bo was kind of the understudy. But by 83, they were basically a team, the two of them. It could go either way. And they were such a great combination because they were both insanely quick. But one was huge and run you over, and the other was tiny and you couldn't catch him. So there was a lot of Michael Dyer, Ontario McCaleb in the way going on there.
Yeah. And Lionel James, great receiver, great punt returner.
Yes. Oh, when he was at the Chargers in the NFL,
yeah,
he was like all-purpose NFL yardage leader there.
He was.
Amazing. Yeah. Okay. We ended up covering all the way down to Cedric McIntyre, who I know nothing about from the early 70s. And then we got the governor, Fob James, and Phil Gargis before you get to the ones we talked about. So we didn't mention Brad Lester, kind of a workmanlike back there in the mid Tuberville years. I don't have a lot to say about him. He's fine.
Trying to see if there's anybody else we haven't talked about. No, I mean, as far as I'm looking at the list I'm looking at, I think we've covered everybody we're talking about.
Yeah.
Peyton Barber. It falls into that Brad Lester category, I think. Solid, productive, but not.
Yeah, I've got Well, George Peoples, I was just reading about from the 81 season, was like a senior. And there was a play against Alabama in 81 where we kept turning the ball over every time we'd threaten Alabama. So finally we got to like our own 37, and Peoples just went up the middle for 63 yards for touchdown Alabama. So if you don't remember Peoples, at least know he did something really, really good before he walked out the door of Auburn. So that was cool. Yeah, Tucker Fredrickson back in the 60s. But yeah, the ones that kind of had a workmanlike career for us, Corey Grant's 47th all-time, Peyton Barber, 45. Fred Beasley as a fullback. He's one of the few fullbacks on the list at 40. We talked about Andrews. And yeah, that's and Booby Whitlow is 30, Cam Martin, 29, and that's pretty much it. Yeah. All right, very cool. Very cool. I'm glad that we did that. So I guess we've got quarterbacks coming up at some point, right?
We do.
That will be interesting. Who, I just closed it out, but who would you take if you have a two-man backfield and you got to pick two running backs?
I'm allowed to take Bo?
Well, we can, all right, are we going to both just automatically take Bo? Let's take Bo. Who else?
Again, what's the conversation that somebody had on Twitter a while ago was no Bo, no Carnell and Ronnie.
Okay.
No Trey Mason.
Okay.
No James Brooks, no Joe Cribbs. Okay. Who are you picking? You have to pick two running backs.
I'm gonna take Brent Fullwood, and I'm gonna take I might take Ontario McCaleb as a compliment for Fullwood. But it's hard to go wrong. Who you got?
Yeah, no, I'm taking Steven Davis as one of mine.
Okay.
And then I kind of want to take Kerryon as the other one.
There you go. No, that's a complimentary set too. Yeah. Power back and kind of an elusive guy. No, you can't go wrong though. Honestly, you're in good shape, man. What I'd like to do is in their prime get Cam Petway and Rudy Johnson. And I would just run, man, I would just pound that in the fourth quarter. That defense would be crying. They'd be like, no more, no more. We'd be like, yeah, here they come, baby. Here come Petway. Here comes Ronnie. Oh, man. I mean, Rudy, yeah. Oh, my gosh. That would be fun. All right. I got to give you a quick book update. The book is going to be out, I'm thinking, early August. It is currently middle of June, and I'm finishing things up on the last few touches I'm doing as kind of a copy editor on it. And then everything that John and I have done to create this book will be finished, and it'll go in. And I think it'll probably be up on Amazon in early August, and I'm hoping to have copies of it with me at Dragon Con. That is the plan, because I know I see quite a few of you guys at Dragon Con every year. You come to my readings or whatever, come to my table in the Comic Artist Alley, and I plan to have a nice stack of them there for anybody that wants to purchase one, and I will sign it. I might even see if I can get John to sign some and then send them to me so I can sign them too. If you're not coming this year, I keep trying to get you to come to Dragon Con, come to Dragon Con. But we'll do that. So I'm looking forward to that. And the other thing I was going to say about it real quick is that it's a book built around our conversations over the years of what it's like being an Auburn person, watching the games, going to Auburn, all that kind of stuff. But the last few touches, including putting in some game information. So you're going to be able to open this book up to any year and read pretty much what happened in every game of any consequence. If you want to know what happened in the 1982 Auburn-Florida game, there'll be like a half a page on it. So this will be a really fun read because it's going to cover a lot of territory in a lot of years. Remember, folks, we do not do ads. We don't have any commercials on our program. We depend on you, the patrons, to keep us in business. So please go to www.auwishbone.com and sign up to be a patron. Remember, anybody who is a patron on August 1st, your name is in the book. And I mean like prominently up at the front. I'm not sticking you back in the back in the index or whatever. Your name's going to be up front on one of the first few pages. I'm going to have everybody's name as it appears on Patreon. So if you want your name to be different than how it is on Patreon, you need to let me know or go in Patreon and change it. Here are the folks that are currently going to be in the book unless they change between now and August 1st. Our great patrons include, where did they go? Chris and Clinton Stewart, Carl Von Drucker, Christopher Burleson, Samuel Salvatore, Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, Chris Usher, Gary Grant, Logan Chilton, Michael Kirshner, Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Trombone Tiger, Willie Carden, Ann Kangian, AU Falling Up, Ben Bloodworth, Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, Daniel Odom, David Evers, David Hegler, Emmanuel Seaman, Eric Morgan, George Gaston, Jacob and Robin Fleming, John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B, Preston Settle, Reynolds Wolf, Rich Reimer, Steve Harlan, Timothy, WDE Richie, we gotta get better at celebrating, Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Boddy, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, Cato the Barner, Chris the Hilton, Colby Butler, Danny Flack, on to the next little group, we're almost done, Darius Benton, David Simpson, Diabama Anytime Now, Earl Ricks, Eric Mahan, I'm gonna have to put that in the book, Diabama, parentheses, Anytime Now, hurry up, please, Eric Mahan, Hugh Anderson, Josh Teal, Kevin Kinoy, Kevin Mahan, Christian Thorvaldson, Lane Middleton, Melissa Blackstone, Mike Finley, Algorithm, Papa Todd, Patrick Williams, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Ross, Russell Milling, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Snowdog, Stephen Houston, Tim Pittman, Tony Perry, 76 Tiger, staying alive, Alex Nguyen. You guys know you can make me say stuff by putting it in your Patreon name. That's not fair. Auburn Elvis, Ben Amos, Ben Regis, Brandon Smith, Charles Mooney, Chris Como, Darren Pyle, David Smiley, Donnie Reynolds, James Taylor, Jason the Weasel Skolobrick, John Stubbs, John Zavachin, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, Justin Bean, Kathy Bright, Kenneth Britt Rains, Mark Squire, Matthew Flowers, Mick Vijakana, Paul Bankson, Public Land Owner, Robert Drain, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Spanky, Stephen Thompson, Trevor Johnson, Brant Rumble, Chris, plus our one-time and anonymous donors, and a bunch of the people I just read. I know I'll be seeing at Dragon Con because I see you every year at Dragon Con, so I can't wait, and I hope you'll be wanting to pick up one of the books because it'll have your name in it. It'll be awesome. So go to www.auwishbone.com. If you want to have your name in the book with everybody else, then just go ahead and click that big orange button to become a patron and put your name as the way you want it to appear on the website and in the book. All right, www.auwishbone.com. John, it is time for Guess the Game. Are you ready?
Bring it on.
Ha ha, he's ready. Here we go. Let's go to Jared's awesome Guess the Game. Who can
it be now? Hello, Van, John, and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrick, the yard sale artist, here with Guess the Game number 16. This is a send-in from Twitter follower and fan of the show, WiggyBR? Wiggaber? I don't know. But hey, he's got a great suggestion, so let's listen to it.
Here comes, takes the snap to throw. Across the middle, caught, first down at the 12-yard line. Ball knocked loose. Auburn picks it up. Takes it up to the 16-yard line. Oh, what a hit. That's Auburn's ball, but the receiver is still down on the field. Man, oh man, did lay a lick on, and he is down.
And that is a big turnover right there. Now, we hope is okay, but it is a catch, and just laid into, and the ball sits on the ground for a while, and that is a fumble, ladies and gentlemen, and is down.
All right, Van and John, that's what you get. Pretty long clip, but what's going on there? Maybe you'll figure it out. We'll see. Catch you in the hint file.
All right, first, I always get such a laugh because the way that sometimes they say it and you get the bleep, it's like they're cussing. I'm always like, Rod, man, what do you say? And it just sounds like he's like just cussing a blue streak. I know he's not, but that's what it sounds like. I'm kind of at a loss here. It's a Rod Bramblett era game.
So that is time period is when?
2003 through a couple of years ago. Through
so initially, 18. I thought it was the Junior Rose Green hit, but you're saying it's too...
What year would that have been? I can't remember.
It was against Georgia. It would have been...
I don't remember what years he played. Wasn't he there in Tuberville?
Yes.
Okay.
So, like... Before the switch, it was a home game against Georgia.
Okay.
And so what years were the home games against Georgia, odd or even back then? So we played Georgia home in 04. So
yes.
We played them at home in 06.
Yes.
So I want to say it was maybe the 06 game.
06. Well, we had a defense that year, that's for sure. Okay. That's fine with me. I really have no clue. So we're gonna pencil in Georgia as well. But wait a minute, we lost that game. We lost to Georgia in 06.
But I think because we talked about it on the show and he was making the big thing about this is where I killed that guy, whatever, on the field.
Okay.
On Twitter, I think that's why this guy picked this game. That's my I'm seeing the pattern here.
That's interesting. I have nothing to refute that. I'm going to go ahead and go to the hint file because I really don't have anything to add.
I could be completely wrong.
But see, you have an idea and I don't have any idea. So let's go to the hint file because this is Auburn stopping a drive.
But also they're concerned about the other team's player.
They are. That's
true. You know what I'm saying? They think like the Auburn player really injured the other
really
team's
hurt
player.
Him. All right.
In a play where he knocked the ball loose.
Right. All right. Let's go to the and it's in the right time frame for Rod Bramblett for sure. All right. Let's go.
All right, John Van, you are now in the hint file. So let's take out those bleeps and see what we got.
Here comes Green, takes the snap to throw. Across the middle, caught, first down at the 12-yard line. Ball knocked loose. Auburn picks it up. Will Herring takes it up to the 16-yard line.
That's
oh,
Auburn's
what a
ball.
Hit. That's Auburn's ball, but the receiver, Reggie Brown, is still down on the field. Man, oh, man, did Junior Rosegreen lay a lick on Reggie Brown, and he is down.
And that is a big turnover right there. Now, we hope Reggie Brown is okay, but it is a catch, and Junior Rosegreen just laid into Reggie Brown, and the ball sits on the ground for a while, and that is a fumble, ladies and gentlemen, and Reggie Brown is down.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you got it all figured out and nailed down by now if you didn't already. So I'll see you guys in the answer file.
So what years did Junior Rosegreen play?
Well, again, because Will Herring, part of that clip too, right? And David Green, the Georgia quarterback in that play.
Yep.
So was that the earlier – was it 2002 perhaps?
Well, we lost to them in 2002.
Why does it have to be a win?
That's what I'm trying to figure out. We beat Georgia in 04 and 05.
I mean, maybe it was in the 04 game. I don't know.
Five is the one where we had the big pass to that went down to the fumbled in the goal line.
So did it happen in the 04 game where we did the stomping on them?
Well, we don't know. This was in Auburn, do we? He was on the 04 roster.
Was it in the 04 game where we crushed them?
He wasn't on the 05 team. He was on 02, 03, and 04.
Yeah, and I know David Green was gone by 05 and 06. He was the Georgia quarterback in like 2002, 2003, 2004. So,
and Rose Green was 02, 03, and 04. But we lost.
So let's say 04.
Yeah, we lost to Georgia in 02 and 03. So I think it's 04.
Okay, let's say 04.
I think Jared's going to go with a winning game. I don't think he's going to give us one where we lost.
Okay.
So I think it's going to be 04. Let's see.
All right. If you guess that this is Auburn playing Georgia in the 2004 season, well, then you guessed right. Got
right.
a bit of notoriety lately when Junior Rosegreen talked about the spot where he killed a man. Yeah, that was a tough play to watch. That guy was really down, but I believe it all worked out okay in the end. And that's your guess the game from Wigaber. If anyone else would like to send in a play request, you can hit me up. I'm at Yard Sale Artist, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. It's all at Yard Sale Artist. Back to you, Van and John, and War Eagle.
Good deal, because I like that one because everybody remembers Carlos Rogers, right?
Yes.
Intercepting that in that game, but we forget that that was the same game where Rosegreen had that hit. We really put the fear of God into Georgia that day. That was just an unbelievable performance that game. All right, I think we're ready for our last little bit where I
thank
say,
you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
All right. Do we have any questions?
Not many.
Okay.
All right. But the first question is from Bradley Blackman.
Okay.
Who says about the 12-team playoff. I know there has been much discussion about the 12-team playoff, But which Auburn teams since 2000 would have made the playoff having not won the SEC? Go ahead.
2 and 5 are the and 6. 6 for sure, right?
Yes. So that's 6 is the – he says, you know, obviously 2004, 2010, 2013 would have made it. But
yeah.
2006, 17, yeah. and 19, he feels like.
Yes. Well, but we know that 19 wouldn't because of that quirk with the champion, with the conference champions. Yeah.
But another reason, honestly, just to be frustrated about 19.
Oh, they had no business being. Yeah, absolutely. And I wonder if 7, they were not bad. But I don't know if they would have been in the top 12 and there wouldn't have been some other conference that could have jumped them.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything going all the way back to then projected at 7. But I don't think – where did we end the year at 7? Like, what was our
– Well, that was the year we lost to, like, South Florida early on.
That's right.
But then we ended up beating Alabama and we lost to LSU on the last – one of those freaky last-second things. We lost to Georgia and LSU – and South Florida, but I feel like we beat everybody else pretty much. So we were like a 9-3, 9-4. I don't, you know, so I'll double check. But what else we got?
All right, that was it. If that's it for listener questions. Well, listeners, I challenged you a couple weeks ago. You got to bring it. You got to do better.
We're running a little late tonight anyway, so that's okay. But we can't have that in the future. Yeah, the 07 team, they lost to South Florida and they lost to Mississippi State. 19-14. They lost at LSU in a last second play, and then they lost to Georgia. But they beat Alabama. They beat Clemson. They beat Florida in the swamp with the last kick, you know, Byram, freshman. So
I can't get excited about an Auburn team in the playoffs and lost to Mississippi State. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's true. They ended up ranked 15. So yeah, they were 9-4. Not bad. But ranked 15, they probably wouldn't have gotten in. So there you go. So, yeah, I think we had it right. All right. Well, I don't think we have an around the SEC. We're pretty much up against the clock now. So I think we should call it a night. And any last thoughts from you, John?
I don't want a good running backs.
Yeah.
And we're going to have another one join the Pantheon at the end of this season.
Oh. Oh. I think that if everything goes well, everybody stays healthy, you could very well be accurate about that. Very well be right, and I want to see it. And I think with a good passing game finally, there'll be even more opportunities. All right, well, on that happy note, I think our time is up, and I think we thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.